Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Welcome to another episode of Acts of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. Joining as me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Woo, Raptors, yay.
And joining me and welcome back is Kitty McCarthy.
Hello, thanks for having me. It's very exciting to be back. I just got back from E3.
Are you still alive?
No. Woke up and I posted immediately in Slack, I have a really bad sore throat, but I'm feeling better now, so I'm on the right track.
Well, we're going to talk to you about all the things that you saw at E3, because you got to have hands-on with Final Fantasy VII Remake, you mm-hmm. got to talk to the folks behind Cyberpunk, and you saw a lot of other things, and interested to hear your thoughts on that. In the meantime, if you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm at Twitter at @the_catbot. Nadia is on Twitter at Nadia Oxford, and Katie is on Twitter at @YouMayKatie. And you can follow all of our social accounts at USGamerNet. Make sure to follow our newsletter, which comes out every single Wednesday. Nadia, what did you write about in the most recent newsletter?
I actually wrote a bit about how a very interesting piece of news came up. Obviously, Breath of the Wild 2 was revealed, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that today. I read something saying the producers for that, sorry, the developers on that, are actually inspired by Red Dead Redemption 2. So I was wondering, what kind of lessons can Breath of the Wild 2 take from Red Dead Redemption 2, Arthur?
Interesting. Well, if you want to read the full thing, you should subscribe to the newsletter, and you can get little pearls of wisdom from Nadia every
Sure, let's call them pearls of wisdom.
So, Katie, you're at the show. You're on the show floor. What was the energy? What did you kind of take away from this year's show?
It was weird. It felt very empty. So I feel like everyone the past couple years has been complaining about how it's so crowded now that the public's let in. And there was, no one there. It was weird. And the show floors had a weird vibe because Nintendo was the only one that had an on-floor presence, really. Mm-hmm. So it was just very strange. The South Hall was more poppin'. That had Square Enix, and Gearbox had a huge Borderlands booth. And Nintendo's in West Hall, and they took up almost all of West Hall. It was just so much Nintendo space, and then other things. There was a weird energy drink stage in the South Hall that brought Booth Babes back, so that was weird.
Oh boy, just what everyone
And
wanted.
It wasn't even like they're giving them away for free. You had to buy them. I was like, what's the point?
How cheap can you get?
Right?
Energy drinks are cheaper than piss at those events.
Usually they just hand them out candy,
Yeah.
That's been my experience at Anime Expo and stuff.
Absolutely.
Free shit. But not here. It was you could buy this energy drink and watch these girls dance in booty shorts. It was very strange. I was where am I?
Yeah, by the end of the show, people were posting pictures on Thursday, and man, the show was completely dead. Nobody was there.
No one.
Yeah, last
there
day was dead.
No one.
So the correct answer, obviously, is don't go the first day, go the last day.
Yeah, I feel every day was there are still lines. The public, you're still probably waiting in line for a couple hours, but I don't think it was as bad as maybe the past 2 years, but maybe it's also because it was a way weaker convention. It's Microsoft is offsite, and yeah. They were mostly appointments. I don't know if they had a public thing. Actually, EA Play was on the weekend. Activision was even there. It was just a very strange thing. It was weird.
Yeah, and Sony wasn't even there as well. In the past, they've always had a giant Sony booth where you could at least have a ton of kiosks and you could play a lot of different PlayStation 4 games. So
yeah, I kind of miss the Microsoft booth and the PlayStation 4 booth staring each other down across the aisle like Romeo and Juliet, Montagues and Capulet.
Just Nintendo all by itself in the center, basically. And then they had a cool Luigi statue. I took a picture of it. And they also had the Pokemon starters, and they that was cute. And then Monster Hunter World or Capcom had like a huge like dragon, and I was like, whoa, it's like a little scary. It's like right by the Square Enix booth.
Oh, I saw that. I saw pictures of that, the big kind of reindeer dragon thing.
Yeah,
it looks really cool.
It was huge.
I don't think it helped that so many developers are punting to 2020. Mm-hmm. There's a rumor on the street that Breath of the Wild 2 will be out next year. Microsoft is going, obviously, big with Scarlet next year and Halo Infinite. PS5's coming out next year. A lot of the biggest games won't be shown until the next E3. Whereas this show was a lot of games that we already kind of knew about. Like, yeah, we got to see Final Fantasy VII Remake for the first time, but it wasn't like it just kind of came out of nowhere. We had already seen Cyberpunk at some length. There was stuff like Watch Dogs Legion, but ultimately there's only so much excitement that a game like Watch Dogs can drum up. So it wasn't underwhelming so much as so much of it was already known. Were known quantities, and it was hard to be like, oh, we have to go play this game at this show.
I think Final Fantasy is probably the biggest thing that people were scrambling to play, because like I saw like a public line, so basically like what, like I had an appointment thing, but they were kind of filtering in people from the line from like, okay, everyone raise your hand if you're playing this, and then we're gonna bring in like X amount of people from this public line. So that was probably like the big I gotta see this thing, but like there really wasn't anything else that like I guess fits that description.
So Katie, speaking of Final Fantasy VII Remake, you actually got to play it and check it out, and you got the big presentation and everything. You wrote some breakouts for us over on the site. We ended up calling Final Fantasy VII Remake the game of the show. Nadia and I have already gushed about it on the podcast based on the demo that we saw, but what's it like to actually play it?
Yes.
I feel like there's a really good rhythm to the combat. So the big hands-off demo they showed us, which is basically just the intro to the game, like it's like right after Cloud hops off that train. It was a lot more they definitely pared it down for the hands-on demo, because there's like systems that were not in the Sentinel fight that were in like the intro stuff. So which I thought that was really weird, but I guess it makes sense because it's like you need something a little easier to like ease people into this and just give them a taste of like what this combat's like. But yeah, so like the hands-on with it, there's like I feel like a really good flow of hopping between Cloud and Barret, because like you're managing like your ATB charges. So basically like when you have like a full, I think both of them have like two bars of their ATB charges, just charges over time and also faster if you do damage. And when you fill up one bar, you can do an ability. So basically you go into like bullet time when you're like, I forgot what button you press, but you basically just go into bullet time and you can like choose like a magic ability or a strength ability or do a limit break if you have like that meter filled up. And so it's, yeah, the flow comes in like you're managing those charges and then you're switching between them like, okay, I'm going to do this like ability that uses like two of Barret's ATB charges, but then I'm going to switch back to Cloud immediately when he's done because Cloud is now building up higher. So it's like you're kind of ping-ponging back and forth between the two characters. And it's actually like pretty satisfying and pretty fun. I found like the boss to be like a little bit clunky. Like it was like, oh, we gotta hide behind this debris. And it was a little weird in that sense. I don't think it was like an amazing boss fight.
I'll be honest, the first boss fight in Final Fantasy VII is really clunky to begin with. I don't know, Square Enix at the time was going through this whole phase where they made the first bosses of their Final Fantasy games as clunky as hell for some reason. So yeah, I'm not surprised somehow.
Yeah, it was like a little strange, and I just don't have a handle on like the dodging and stuff yet, because I found that to be like a little hard to get a handle of, like where this, like, because there's like a few moves that the Scorpion does, like sometimes he just like pounds into the floor in front of you and stuff, and it was hard to get a handle of like, okay, like where do I need to be outside of this range of like damage, fire or whatever. So that was like a little hard to get a handle of. Like I think I only died once in the boss. It was like pretty easy other than that, but again, they like definitely simplified the controls and probably lessened the difficulty because it's the first big boss. But yeah, it was, I don't like Final Fantasy XV. I've made this known pretty widely across the site. So I was worried that this combat would feel like that, and I'm pleased to say it doesn't. It feels like pretty distinct, and I think the like bullet time type thing helps give it like a level of strategy that would be missing if it was just like a pure just action game. And yeah, I just think it feels really good to play, and I'm excited to see more of it. And I guess that's very soon, because it's coming out like March, right? Or is it April? March?
No, it's going to
be out
March.
In March. Yeah.
Beginning of March.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. We were kind of wondering how exactly the limit breaks work. You said there's an extra gate?
Yeah. So you have two ATB. You have the ATB meters, and then next to it, you have the limit meter. And I don't remember how that charges up, but it might be the same thing of, like, just damage stuff. But, yeah, so basically it's, like, it's almost like an extra ATB meter, but it has its own, it's, like, a limit break ability. And I forgot what Clouds and Barrett's
probably
are,
braver.
There's, like, extra strong abilities, you know?
Yeah.
And there's also, like, in the hands-off demo they showed us, there's another thing where it's, if you press triangle, you can enter a different mode for your character. So for Cloud, he can go into, I think it's called Punisher mode, where he starts moving very slowly, but his attacks are way stronger. So if you're in like a one-on-one battle, that might be a good way to clear that person, like a tough enemy out. And then you can switch back to the other mode. And Barrett has like a similar other mode. And yeah, it just seems like they're trying to think, they're almost like thinking of this almost as like a turn-based game, even though it's very action oriented, because you're like switch, or more like maybe like real, I don't know, real-time turn-based is that a thing, but like
sure.
You're like
it is now,
I guess.
Yeah,
so
it's called Baldur's Gate.
Have not played that, so
oh yeah, hearing you talk about Final Fantasy VII Remake is a giant relief to me, because I was kind of in the same boat with you. I like Final Fantasy XV better, but I thought the combat was definitely the weakest part of that game. And I was really nervous that it was going to be your fairly typical kind of square thing where the characters are flying around. It's very hack and slash and confusing with crazy camera angles. And I was just bracing myself to be really disappointed in that regard. So to hear that it's kind of slower, more tactical, more thoughtful is awesome.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah. I left that demo being like, oh, cool. Okay. So this is better than I thought it would be, which is a good thought to have when I was worried about it.
So you also saw Cyberpunk 2077. Mm-hmm. They had an interesting weekend because they started out really strong with Keanu Reeves being debuted as Johnny Silverhand. But then there was a lot of discussion about a poster that depicted a transgender person in a really sexualized pose for an energy drink thing. And then there was a lot of discussion about CD Projekt's kind of troubled history with social media and such and transgender issues in general. And so they were kind of on the defensive about that. And also RPS put out a pretty harsh preview in which they were really going after the gunplay and a lot of, and were just really down on it.
Yeah.
So having seen the demo yourself and had a chance to talk to the developers, what's your take, Katie?
I love The Witcher 3. I've said this like a billion times, so I'm still like cautiously optimistic about that game, but the demo we saw wasn't super amazing. Because I kind of fall on how RP, like I still think it looks like the world looks like super cool, and I feel like they're doing very interesting stuff abilities and class wise, like in terms of like you're gonna be like choosing like a life path for your character, and you have like a distinct like characterization based on that, and you'll like open up dialogue choice. It's like a very RPG-y thing, you know. But like yeah, the gunplay just doesn't look great. It looks kind of like, you know, by the numbers. I don't, obviously I wasn't hands-on, so it's like a weird thing to like judge based solely on sight, you know. It's like I feel like I almost want to wait to hold that judgment or pass that judgment until I get hands-on. But like a cursory watch of like that hour-long demo, I was like, it was just like combat arena, you shoot things, you hop into cover, you mm-hmm. But the ability stuff, like they switch between two separate builds. They switch between a Netrunner build who could like hack stuff, so they would like hack a turret, and that was kind of cool. Like it felt kind of like Deus Ex-y. And then they switched to another build that was, I can't remember the name of it, but they're kind of like a more tough person. So their big thing is like they could just like straight up like rip open doors instead of like hacking off a security camera or something. Or
that's
they could, yeah, right, or they could like rip out a turret and then use that turret, and they're just like more of a strong person. And then, yeah, like the, so that type of stuff seems really fun and potentially interesting. Like the, you know, character build stuff. But the, yeah, the shooting just doesn't look that great. And like the demo was fine, and Keanu Reeves is in it a lot. So that was like another thing I was surprised about, is that Keanu Reeves is like pretty prominent in this game. He's a digital ghost of Johnny Silverhand, who's, I guess, a prominent character in the tabletop series. And he's like a digital ghost. So he'll just like pop up and just start talking to you. And like, he's kind of like the voice inside your head type thing. So, but yeah, that was something I was surprised about, because I was expecting this to be like, you know, the extent of a Call of Duty cameo where they're like the villain, or they're like barely a character and they just like show up and it's like, yeah, I did like mocap for a day. But no, like Keanu seems like he's going to be in this game a lot. And that's like pretty much, from what I gather, going to be the central mystery, is like what happened to him. And you find like graffiti around. There's a graffiti at one point that said like, where's Johnny? So it's like he's definitely like a big figure in this world. And V, your character, is the only person that could like see and interact with him, basically.
Man, shows how far CD Projekt has come, that they were able to get Keanu Reeves at the height of his powers.
Right?
At the height of his power, like he's a werewolf, which people do speculate he's a vampire. But yeah.
I'm like cautiously optimistic. I talked to the developers. We talked pretty candidly about like, you know, quest direction, that type of stuff, and also the controversies from this week of like the poster thing, and also all, you know, all that stuff. I don't know. I'm excited for the RPG parts of Cyberpunk, but maybe not the shooting.
So it sounds very CD Projekt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like you were bringing up earlier in our Slack, like The Witcher's combat's been like the most heavily criticized thing, I think. So I feel like that's gonna be another case here. Like maybe the shooting's gonna be the thing that people don't like about this game, but then everything else, everyone's like, wow, amazing, you know?
I think that RPGs tend to show really poorly because it's so hard to get a good vertical slice out of them.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see the way that all of the storylines connect, the choices that you're making. I remember when Witcher 3 was being shown years ago, it mainly was focused on the hunt with the griffin, which admittedly looked really neat, but did not come close to highlighting everything that you could do in that game and everything that made it so special.
I feel like the last year's demo, which I think they streamed in like the month after E3 or something, I think that made me more interest in that game than the demo they showed us this E3 for. I can't really put my finger on why. Maybe because it was like less flashy. It was like a way less flashy demo. Like there's a cool like motorcycle sequence where it's like they're like, yeah, you can customize your motorcycle and drive third or first person, so you'll be able to see your character you customize at least like in third person driving.
Yay.
If you want.
And drive a motorcycle. That sounds pretty cool actually.
Yeah. I was thinking like, man, I'd like make it look like the Akira bike.
There you go. Yeah. Now you're thinking with gas. Yeah.
Now I'm thinking. I'm excited. It didn't like blow me away. Like I think last year where I was like, yeah, I'm into this. And then I saw like the demo thing a month later. I was like, okay, I'm really into this. But yeah, now I'm like, oh, eh.
I'm into this.
But Keanu. So
it's going to be awesome.
I'll still probably love it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like I don't think I'm going to not like that game type thing.
I am struggling to imagine a scenario in which Cyberpunk 2077 is bad.
Maybe if it's like really offensive somehow, you know, you never know. Like they when I interviewed them or the quest director, he gave me like a lot of context for some of the stuff that I was like a little bit concerned with in the demo. A lot of the names that people are getting hung up on are actually from like the original tabletop RPG, like the Voodoo Boys gang of like the Haitians who came in to build this like lavish vacation city or district called Pacifica. And then the corporations like abandoned building up the city. So now it's just like a place where people squat. Mm. And that was like where this demo took primarily place in, which I found really fascinating because you see kind of like the remnants of these like half built skyscrapers and these people just like like that were just basically brought over to the city and then abandoned. I mean, the story is definitely going to dig into that type of stuff. And I feel like that's like the smaller details of the world is what I feel like I'm the most interested in so far. Like I don't really have a idea of how the main story is going to go. Like they haven't really told much about that, which is weird.
So some other games that are relevant to our audience's interests that are on the Best of E3 2019 awards list, which you can find over on the site. I don't know if you would necessarily call this an RPG, but it was written in part by Chris Avellone, this Dying Light 2, which is really shaping up to be a kind of a sleeper hit, I think.
Yeah, so it's weird. Like, yeah, I don't know if I'd call Dying Light 2 an RPG either, but I feel like the choice-driven stuff definitely reminds me of an RPG. And, like, you just said, like, earlier that it's hard for RPGs to show a sliver of how, like, your choices matter and stuff. And I feel like Dying Light 2 did a really good job of that in their hands-off demo. Like, it's like there's two basically big choices you can make that demo that can, like, drastically impact not just, like, the story, but the world itself. So I wrote about this on the site, but I'll just recap it very quickly here. You're basically this guy named Aiden Caldwell, I think. And, like in Dying Light, the original one, there's zombies and there's humans, but instead of the first one where a lot of it is you're, like, going out to scavenge for supplies to keep the people alive, because that takes place, like, I think directly after the zombie thing. Dying Light 2 takes place 15 years later, so you're in this place called The City, and it's just, like, this giant... It's, like, the last remaining bastion of civilization, essentially. And it's kind of, like, a lot of European... It's in Europe, apparently, so it's, like, a lot of... It's a very diverse city. And you're going to meet up with, like, this truck or something, but then a fight breaks out, and then your friend Frank gets shot. So you have, like, this timed window, and you can either go find a doctor for your buddy Frank, who just got shot, or you can chase after the truck and, like, go to this, like, fortress to sneak in and turn on the water valve supply because the city needs water or something. They didn't really explain that very clearly. So our demo player decided to go to chase after the truck, and then it's going fine, and we're getting updates on, like, the guy's health, and I was like, oh, he's probably gonna die or something. And then, yeah, like, right as we're about to, like, sneak into this facility, we learn, oh, he died. So that's, like, a big thing where it's like, apparently this major character just dies because you didn't go help him, and apparently he's, like, part of your, like, crew in the beginning. And then you sneak into this place, and this guy confronts you, and he's like, I know where there's water. These valves don't work. Like, I will show you where to bring water back into the city elsewhere, because they're theoretically using this water. I think his name's the Colonel or something. And so you have, like, this other split second decision. Like, you can agree with, like, side with this stranger and, like, believe him and go get your water supply for the city elsewhere, or you can fight him and turn on the water supply and save the city. So the demo player chose the ops, like, the turning on the water valves. There's, like, a big battle, a big boss fight, and then turned on the water, and apparently, like, when you do that, a district of the city, like, submerges from, like, underwater, so now you can explore this new area, but now there's, like, a new scary zombie that's, like, gonna start appearing throughout the world, and apparently those are the types of decisions that, or there's, like, a few, I'm guessing there's, like, not that many of those type of big decisions, but how you play the game unlocks certain parts of the open world, and, like, on one playthrough, you won't see, like, 50% of the game, which seems, like, really fascinating, and if they pull it off, like, that's pretty astounding. Like,
yeah.
More than just, because we get so many, it's like, yeah, the story changed, but when you're changing, like, the mechanics you're unlocking and the world types, like, the parts of the world that you're seeing, that's pretty crazy.
That totally is pretty crazy. I wish that I could be more into it, because, I don't know, zombies are kind of a deal breaker for me.
They're, yeah, like, barely in it from what we saw. Like, they're pretty much, like, nighttime you're going to be facing zombies, daytime you'll be facing humans, and this definitely seems to be leaning into the human side of this more. But they didn't, like, it's not like there's no zombies in this game. They're still present. But this, I don't know, I don't know if the story is super selling me yet. I'm more interested in, like, humanity building itself up after a collapse. Like, I feel like that's always ripe for interesting things. But, yeah, I don't know. And I feel like the movement and traversal reminds me a lot of Mirror's Edge, which is why I was curious about the first game, because I love Mirror's Edge, like, even the new one. I don't know. Call me crazy. But I love, like, good first-person parkour. I think it's super fun. And this game just looks like it has a lot of that, and it blends it into the combat, and I've heard it has, like, really good melee combat, which I also love when that's done right. So I don't know. I'm really excited for Dying Light 2, which I did not expect to say coming out. Like when I had that appointment, I was like, I don't know anything about the first game. So and I came out and I was like, oh, this looks sick. Okay.
Games that a game that I am more interested in that I didn't think I would necessarily be interested in was Fire Emblem Three Houses, and I know that I'm traditionally a Fire Emblem fan, but I was kind of side-eyeing it because it seemed to be
down on it.
Yeah, because it seemed so, I don't know, it was getting into some pretty hoary anime tropes with its Battle Academy stuff. But Eric Van Allen, who also really likes Fire Emblem, checked it out and ended up saying that was one of the best games he saw at E3. He said that the actual combat is very Fire Emblem, though they have some interesting twists, like they get rid of the weapons triangle and, quote, add some fascinating twists to combat with battalion gambits, and combat arts ramps up the scale, layers of management sim/dating game over the top. So it sounds pretty neat. And his preview ended up getting a fair amount of interest from people because, I mean, like he talked at some length about what it means for the gameplay to get rid of the weapons triangle, which undergirds the entirety of the gameplay. But I think there's a lot of interest in this game in general.
I was going to say, it's actually pretty gutsy to get rid of the weapons triangle, because that's like been like the basis of the game for so long. Although, if I'm not mistaken, didn't Shadows Over Valentia not have it?
Yes, because it was one of the older games.
Right. And how did that work out? Was it like really
tedious? It's kind of a grind. Valentia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering. Because it's so stats-focused instead.
Exactly.
Yeah, so the tactical component ends up getting lost a little bit.
Right. But I guess that's not going to be a problem. I can't really see them saying, hey, let's get rid of this beloved mechanic and let's grind more. How about that?
Another game from you, Katie, that you ended up checking out, John Wick Hex, which you describe as XCOM meets Super Hot.
Yeah. That's funny.
I mean, I saw, and then after I thought of that description, I literally saw a headline that said that, so I guess I'm not alone with that comparison. But yeah, it's like, you know, a strategy game on like a hex grid, so it's technically like a hex game. And you have like strategy stuff, so like you have like a percentage, like an XCOM, of like, okay, like what's the likelihood of me actually making this shot or making this ability work? But it's all like super hot, so like when you move, the enemies move, so it's like whatever action you're taking, like if you're bandaging up, it will take like X amount of seconds. And that's the amount of seconds that the enemies are also moving. So you have like a timeline on the top of your screen and you're kind of like mapping out like, okay, like I have, like if I shoot, it's going to take like 0.6 seconds. I don't remember if that's the actual time, but it's like, that's that. But there's also a certain, there's like a window of you pulling out your pistol that's accounted into that. So you have to like look at like, okay, what is this enemy going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be, you have to like map out, okay, so I can get in a shot here because they're slower at pulling it or getting into a range where they can pull out their gun and shoot me. But then there's sometimes where it's like, oh, if I try to shoot, I'm going to get shot. So I should like crouch and roll and then shoot. And there's like all these sorts of, and it's like you're moving, yeah, like in a forwards and backwards and like diagonal sometimes and like usually within like a couple spaces. But I thought it was, like, so fun. Like, I could see myself getting really into that game. Like, it's just, like, really cool. It, like, feels good. And it feels very John Wick. Like, you have your gun and everything. But every time you're out of ammo, if you don't have, like, an extra magazine clip, you have to get a new gun. So, like, in an act of desperation, you could throw your gun at someone. You can, like, pick up anyone's gun after you take them down. There's, like, all of these aspects that just, like, feel very John Wick-ish. And it just, like, feels really cool. And I don't know. Like, I love, like, or I've been, like, I used to be, or I had, like, a phase with, like, XCOM 2 ages ago. But, like, I kind of fell off that type of game. And I feel like between this and I think it's Overland, which I think is coming to Switch later this year, too. And John Wick, I think, is only confirmed for PC and Mac so far. It's an Epic exclusive. And that's coming to consoles later, and they didn't say which consoles. But yeah, like I'm like, man, between John Wick Hex and Overland, like these strategy games are kind of taking on a new style and like tweaking the familiar formula in cool ways. And yeah, I don't know, that game's really cool.
Some games that ended up being in our staff favorites, but ultimately did not make the list. And there were a couple of surprising ones. One was Cyberpunk, mostly because, as you were saying, Katie, you were a little more down on the demo this year. And another one was Pokemon Sword and Shield.
Which, yeah, not because of me.
Eric was saying that maybe we should put it on there, but I was kind of pushing back against it because, well, first of all, the demo that they were showing at E3 was somewhat limited. And I think that everything at E3 was totally subsumed by, well, the revelation that not the entire Pokedex is going to be making its way over to Sword and Shield, which I ended up writing some words about that over on the site. You should go read them. But suffice it to say, I'm a little unhappy about this.
Yeah.
I feel like you're so mad. I'm like, I can't mad the big fry deal, but I guess it's bad.
I can understand where Kat and other people like that are coming from. I understand, yeah. As Kat says, Pokemon is a franchise that has been, you know, with us for so long, and to just kind of yoink our favorites at this stage in the game is kind of a crappy thing to do. But I also honestly believe that Game Freak will be adding in the Pokemon as time goes by, especially now that the uproar has been what it has been. I see where they're coming from, and that, yes, modeling 800 Pokemon in HD is no small task. Like, mm-hmm. that's a lot of labor. So if they can't have it all ready at once, then okay, fine. You know, if they can tell us, well, okay, we'll work on this. I think that would probably soothe a lot of troubled hearts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that one of the things that's kind of hanging over Pokemon that nobody really talks about is the fact that they have a lot of work to do and they cannot delay it.
Exactly. There can't be a delay.
Yeah, there is no delaying Pokemon. There's nothing. It's not like Animal Crossing where you can push it into 2020. It is part a one cog in an extremely complicated marketing machine, and it must come out when it comes out. So therefore, I think they just don't have time to model all of them. And they're just giving them themselves space to be able to add in older ones a little bit later, whether through mystery gifts or updates or whatever. But, I mean, just talking about it kind of casually, it ended up kind of subsuming the entire narrative around Sword and Shield. And I maybe for good reason, because I think, as I was writing in my article, so much of the appeal of Pokemon is the sense that it's this big connected world, and that the adventures that you had in previous games matters, that it's not just hitting a reset switch every time. And people have these giant collections that they've built. There are people who play just because they want to obsessively collect every single Pokemon and have their quote-unquote living Pokedex. There are the people who are completely obsessed with getting the rarest of rare Pokemon. The shinies that have specific dates and specific times and can be validated to be from this game in this year at this event, right? And if you can't bring that over, that is breaking the game for a lot of those people. And as for me, like, I had come to find a lot of enjoyment in bringing over all my friends from the previous games and rolling through the content in this one, almost like it was a big content update for one of those crazy platform games like Division 2 or something. And I know in my heart that my favorites are not, at least one of my favorites, probably multiple of my favorites, are not coming over. There's just no way that Infernape is going to be in this one.
Why do you think Infernape's not going to make it?
It's not popular enough.
You don't think so?
No.
I can see all the starters coming over.
No, I don't think so at all.
I feel like the starters are like maybe the ones that would make
in Ruby and Sapphire. In Ruby and Sapphire, they didn't bring over any of the starters.
That was kind of different, though. That was a really different time for Pokemon, I think.
I guess. I think they'll bring over the original Red and Blue ones because they're so iconic, but the rest,
I can't see them being left behind.
And if any Pokemon's going to get left behind, it's probably Infernape, because Infernape's just not popular enough. And it's going to be on a popularity scale. So
they did kind of hint at that already, I guess.
Yeah. So I'll be able to get some over. It'll be fine. I will survive. I'm sure that more will be added in later. I'm sure that at some point they'll release a game that has all of them. Hooray! But
it's just funny to go to show how different Pokemon players are, because I am just not in it for that collection aspect whatsoever. I am just in it like to, you know, wander around and have fun and you know, enjoy the story, enjoy the characters. I can totally see where people are coming from if they want to be into the collection aspect. That's the whole point of the series, at least at first. But yeah, I just, I'm the kind of person who I start all over again with a new Pokedex, and it doesn't bother me at all every time I play a new game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. But I, yeah, like, I understand, like, where, if you've been bringing it forward every game, that fucking sucks. Yeah, it's like, I wouldn't be surprised if they announced, like, they're doing DLC of, like, you know, that would be a way for them to make money. We'll buy it oh, yeah. to get these characters back, you know? So, I don't know.
I'm guessing they're probably feeling the backlash over in Japan. Like, because oh, yeah, that's probably. All anybody's been talking about all week. By far our highest trafficked article of E3 was our interview with the Pokemon folks, where, like, they specifically mm-hmm. address it. And, yeah, I mean, you're right. Pokemon is many different things to many different people, and there will be probably millions of people who buy this game and do not care that previous mm-hmm. characters come out. But as with all things, the members of the hardcore community are the ones who stick around, and they are the loudest and most annoying.
Mm-hmm. They're certainly the loudest.
Yes, and I think I went temporarily insane this week.
I mean, didn't we all? It's E3.
It is E3. You know? We're all a little bit loopy right now.
I said some things I'm not proud of on Twitter.
Yeah, you were really getting into it with some people. It was pretty great.
I was really mad. And I try not to be mad on the internet, but that was a...
You broke the rule.
It broke me. It broke me. I'm okay. I will survive, but oh man.
Your heart will scar eventually, Kat.
You're going through like the stages of grief.
There you know? Go. Yeah, exactly.
Anger.
You're mourning Infernape, who might not yeah. even be dead yet. You don't know.
I'm mourning yeah. my pals. Mourning my pals. But yeah, so I'm sure we'll talk about this more and ad nauseum once Pokemon Sword and Shield comes out. But on a happier note, Breath of the Wild 2 is a thing. It's kind of 50-50 RPG. We only got a tiny trailer, but I mean,
the Majora's masking it. I'm so excited. This is like what I wanted. I was like, I want them to Majora's mask this shit. So, it's gonna, I want them to do some weird dark shit, and they're doing it, and it's gonna be great. I'm so excited.
Here's my theory for Breath of the Wild 2. Are you ready?
Yes.
My theory mm-hmm. is that it will be a co-op game.
That's no, what some people are saying. I mean, not like mandatory co-op, of course, but some people right. are saying, like, you know, play as Link or play as Zelda.
I'm saying
it'd be cool to play as Zelda. That's what
I'm saying. That either you can play as Link, or you can play as Zelda, or you can play as both, and it can be a situation where there's split screen, or one person's playing on the TV and the other person's playing on their Switch. And honestly, my partner loves Breath of the Wild. She loves Zelda, and I think that she would be so pumped to be able to play Breath of the Wild for me, and I think that would be an amazing addition, as long as it's optional and not mandatory.
Yeah, if it's optional,
also,
that's great.
It has to be good, because like maybe because I'm coming right off playing Wolfenstein Youngblood, which didn't have great co-op, and I'm kind of worried about that game. I'm like, it has to be like built for that, mm-hmm. but also to like not feel like shit to play solo. Like that's such a hard balance to strike. So. I'm definitely curious.
Nintendo's pretty good at doing that, though, with the newer Mario games.
I mean, like, the Cappy was kind of, like, barely there. It's more like if you're playing with a kid.
Oh, I mean, like, sorry, I mean, like, the new Super Mario, like, the 2D ones.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking, like, more Odyssey, and I was like, oh, that's, like...
The thing that I'm curious about is... another theory that I kind of had was watching the trailer... I kind of wonder if it's going to be less open and much more of a focused dungeon crawler, which would be a very strong departure from the original Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
I mean, they showed the map at the end there, so I figured maybe not.
There was a theory that Game Explain put forth that I am here for. I think that since Zelda games typically have that, you know, that flip side slash dark world theme going on, I think it's possible that when we see the castle rise at the end, it could be that Link and Zelda and Ganon are just kind of being teleported elsewhere. I don't know if you recall, but in A Link to the Past, the whole idea of the Dark World was it was a place where Ganon like ruled supreme. It was his realm. It was it was a place he could draw a Link into if the circumstances were right. So if they kind of revisit that for Breath of the Wild 2, I think that could be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I agree. It would be cool to see, like, an overworld or underworld type thing.
Yeah, because Zelda games, like,
is the best game.
They have just, like, really good underworld. I mean, look at, like, we were talking about Treemina and Majora's Mask. That's a great realm.
Mm-hmm.
That was Nintendo reusing assets really expertly. Same with, again, A Link to the Past. You have the Dark World, which, even though it's just a palette swap in many ways, just feels so different. Same with Lowrul, which is still a terrible name, but it was a great place to visit.
The Dark of the World and Link to the Past, it didn't feel like a palette swap to me.
Exactly.
Because it had so much of its own feeling, and it had its own unique characters, different music, different architecture, like the pyramid instead of the castle. I thought it was rad.
Yeah, and like spawning in different areas, like land you, like... It's Link to the Past is so good.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah, it definitely wasn't a straight up. It's not like Treemina, where it's not a straight up palette swap by any means, but it is basically Nintendo, you know, expertly taking these assets they already have and saying how can we change them in a way that makes them feel different, and they're really good at that.
Yeah, well, I think that one teaser alone, Nintendo's very smart because it completely took the edge off Animal Crossing being delayed.
Yes.
And just got everybody going nuts over Breath of the Wild sequel. So, good on you, Nintendo. You won E3 again.
They not only that, they kept an actual surprise. We were genuinely surprised by this thing that came out of nowhere. And Kat and I, you know, we were talking about in our last show how there's just no surprises with E3 anymore, thanks to leaks. But there was a big surprise.
Yeah, I had heard whispers that Breath of the Wild 2 was under development. I didn't think they were going to show it. And
no, exactly.
The funny thing was they show Nintendo Directs to a lot of outlets under embargo. We're not one of them. And they only showed up to Banjo. And they're smart because
they're
somebody
smart.
Would have blabbed.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
For sure.
Absolutely. And they're very smart in that regard. Nintendo's very, very strict. They have to be.
So good on you, Nintendo, keeping that one secret. That was a great surprise, I think.
It was a nice surprise, wasn't it? Yeah, I like that surprise.
And I think that's what a lot of people are going into E3 wanting, is that cool little shock. You know, it's like, what? I can't believe this is happening. Like,
it's like, we work hard through E3. It's nice to have a little surprise.
Yeah, and it certainly made up for... I don't want to keep ragging on Microsoft, but it certainly made up for a very boring Xbox press conference.
Yeah, what was up with that? It was like, I honestly forgot they announced a new console during that. Like, someone mentioned it later in the week, and I was like, I forgot that happened. Like,
wow, that's pretty...
Because it was such a boring conference.
I was talking to Tom, and he was like, what's a good advertisement for Game Pass? And I'm like, sure.
Yeah, sure.
I guess.
Yeah. Game Pass is, like, a great deal on... Like, I might finally get it just to play Outer Wilds and, like, Void Bastards and a few other
games. It's an incredible deal,
think,
but they haven't done enough to whip up actual excitement around Microsoft. Like, they got Game Pass, but...
I mean, they got Flight Simulator back.
That looks,
you
know what,
like
my...
the first of 15 years.
My brother is an airplane mechanic / pilot. He is absolutely floored by, like, Flight Sim. He says he's going to buy an Xbox for that, and I believe him.
Oh, I was going to say what's cool about that is, like, because they've been really hammering in this, like, Xbox and PC cross-platform stuff. So I feel like Flight Simulator is honestly happening because they put such a renewed focus back into, like, Microsoft PC stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like that's why. I'm curious to see who's developing it, because I don't know if they revealed that. Like, it has to be an Xbox game studio, right? Like, it has Microsoft.
Yeah,
Flight Simulator.
I would think it'd be internal.
Yeah, because, like, that studio closed, like, 5 years ago, I want to say. Like, they closed the Flight Simulator studio. So I'm wondering who the hell is making it, because I don't know if that trailer had a name on it.
Ghosts.
So.
That game looks so gorgeous.
Ghost Riders.
Oh, my gosh.
It's
it looks
nice.
Really pretty.
Holy
yeah.
crap. I'm not at all into Flight Sim games, but I remember, like, my brother used to play them on the 486, so it's just quite a difference there.
It gives me hope. If Flight Simulator, of all things, can come back from the dead, then perhaps TIE Fighter still has a fighting chance.
There you go. That's the attitude, Kat.
I guarantee that there is somebody who was watching that press conference and saw the Flight Simulator reveal and just burst into tears of, like, happiness because...
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's been so long since the last one, and there were just no hints that it was ever coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just seemed dead. Like... They closed the studio, and that was that.
I'm pretty sure I checked Reddit after that reveal, just, like, you know, looking for Microsoft news in general, or just E3 news, and, like, just they were the Reddit was so happy, like pilots and whatnot. They were just like, as you say, Kat, they were probably crying. I would believe it.
So Nadia, were you crying at Collection of Mana and Trials of Mana remake?
I kind of suspected they were coming, because again, that was another thing that was kind of blown before it was showed up. But I wasn't crying, but I'm very happy about it. I'm actually playing it on my Switch. Trials of Mana, which of course is the new name for Seiken Densetsu 3, and it's going to take me a very long time to get used to that. Yeah, it's pretty great. Again, I think I like the original Secret of Mana a little bit better than Seiken Densetsu 3, but the fact that we can actually play it now in English, that's not a fan translation, that's on my portable, is pretty amazing. I am like going to teleport back to myself in high school in like, you know, 95, was waiting like patiently for Secret of Mana 2 to come out and say, hey, guess what's going to happen like 30 years from now or however long it's been.
And we're getting a massive 3D remake.
Yeah, and according to Eric, it's actually a lot better than the PlayStation 4 Secret of Mana remake that we kind of got last year.
Which looked horrible.
I mean, it looked nicer in that.
Yeah. It already looks a lot nicer, I have to admit.
I think that they got slammed so hard for the low-budget, kind of low-poly look of the Secret of Mana remake that they were like, all right, let's...
It looks like a PS2 game. Like, it just looked like a PS2 game. It was weird.
Yeah.
It was a weird game. I liked it for what it was, but I'm a hardcore Mana fan, so I like any kind of new experience in the Mana universe. But yeah, that was... if nothing else, I'm really irritated by the fact that the game crashed at the drop of a hat. Like, it happens so often to me. And come on, people, that's not excusable.
There's also Tales of Arise, which got a surprising amount of traction because it looked like a Witcher game. Eric has had an interview with one of the developers, and by the time this podcast is up, should be up on the site, so you go check it out.
Yeah, it's being developed on Unreal Engine 4 now, I think. I think that's what Eric told us. So that's like why it looks so nice. I think that's the most shocking thing about it, is like that trailer's like, whoa, this looks like a AAA game. And it's because it's being built on Unreal.
A Tales game with a budget.
Which is interesting. Yeah, right? Right? I don't know. I feel like I'm excited for it. Like, yeah. I really like Tales of the Abyss, but I haven't really played any of the other Tales games.
I haven't played a Tales game since Fantasia on the SNES. Someone did a fan translation of that, and it was like a notorious fan translation, but yeah.
Tales of Destiny is still the best one, but I have not been this interested in a Tales game since Tales of Vesperia, so... All right, so we talked through a lot of the best RPGs and the biggest announcements of E3 2019. So looking at main takeaways, I think my main takeaway is that March and April of next year are going to be freaking stacked.
Yeah, man. It's going to be a lot.
Between Final Fantasy VII Remake and Cyberpunk, just back to back, boom, boom, holy moly.
Yeah, I am going to basically like just clear my life out for Final Fantasy VII Remake.
That's the unfortunate thing is I always go on vacation around that time.
You do. You always have your like, annual week-long vacation. So
yep. How dare you, Kat?
Maybe you have to delay that.
Yeah, so I might have to hold off on traveling wherever the heck I end up going just so that I can sit down and properly enjoy Final Fantasy VII Remake, because I'll be kicking myself
and
if I'm out
Cyberpunk.
Of the country.
Man, that's going to be back to... Yeah, I just... it's like Final Fantasy in March and then Cyberpunk in April. And then Dying Light somewhere in the span of those two.
And don't forget Animal Crossing, everyone. But at least that's a little more easy to enjoy.
Yeah, it's a little more easygoing.
It's
like you play
time.
A little bit every day. That's not like a binge game. It's like you just chill out, check on your town.
Animal Crossing, everybody's going to be like, oh, I'm playing Animal Crossing on my Switch, Final Fantasy VII Remake on my PS4. Life is good.
Speaking of things and RPGs and Switches, what is going to happen with The Witcher 3 on Switch? I have a hard time believing this is going to be a 32-gig game on a card and no DLC.
Oh, shoot. I'm supposed to ask, or email someone about that, and I gotta do
it. Please do, because it sounds like there's some sort of, magic going on, like dark magic, and I'm not sure about this.
Yeah.
Compression.
Yeah, I don't know.
Compression.
I hope it doesn't look like Doom. That's all I'm saying. Like, as long as it doesn't look as bad as Doom, I'm good.
Did Doom look bad? I don't remember.
Yeah,
it looked pretty bad.
It was fuzzy. It was so bad.
They did the best they could, but
I think it was very muddy looking. It was just muddy and blurry. It's not great.
I was looking at some of the shots of Witcher 3 on Switch, and for the most part, it looks fine. But maybe maybe the launch version that came out in 2015 without any of the graphical upgrades or anything like that.
Which would be fine.
Yeah.
I can deal with that. I think the trade-off to be able to play it in handheld mode, as long as handheld mode has like decent frame rates, it might be worth it.
I mean, I've already finished it. I played it on my Xbox One, but there are plenty of people who only own a Switch and are now probably very happy to have a chance to play the, well, one of the greatest RPGs ever made.
Yeah, I haven't played it yet.
Yeah, it was number 3 on our list. And I think that Witcher 3 on the go on a plane, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a good I'm definitely going to get it and play it again. And Romance Triss this time, because I did Yennefer.
The game's like 150 hours, Katie. You don't have time.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, I don't have time, so I probably won't beat it, but I'm going to get it for Switch and, like, entertain the idea.
I've been, like, saying for a while that I want to play Witcher 3 for the first time, but now I might just wait to see how it winds up on Switch first.
There you go. Katie lives in a time warp. She's able to play so many games that I'm like, how do you have time to play this?
Yeah, Katie.
I don't. That's the answer. It's like, I just
Katie never uses the bathroom.
Yeah, it's like I'm very streamlined in my day-to-day life, you know.
Looking at the nearer term, I think games that we can look forward to this fall, if you're an RPG fan, I mean, certainly Pokemon Sword and Shield is going to be a big one. And we can also look forward to The Outer Worlds, which is coming out, I think it's September, I want to say. I don't remember the exact
October?
One. Yeah.
I feel like it was like by my birthday or something when I saw the release date. I was like, oh, by my birthday. Like, same with Modern Warfare. It's going to be a weird birthday game time. Because my birthday's at the end of October, so there's always games coming out near my birthday.
All right. Well, we can look forward to a lot of amazing games, as always, and E3 coverage is a wrap, so we can all start relaxing for a little bit. It's going to be...
What? I have so much to do. It's not a wrap for me.
Yeah, it's going to be a wrap, and we all get to rest.
Gotta sleep.
All right, let's throw away these transcriptions.
Gotta sleep for a week.
Axel Blogout is a US Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave us a review, subscribe to our newsletter, follow us on all of the social media accounts. Once again, I'm at @_catbot. Nadia is at Nadia Oxford, and Katie is at Yume Katie. Katie, since you're on the show, is there anything you want to promote? I know you got a podcast and a Patreon.
Yeah, I have Bad End Podcast. I do it with my old coworkers from Killscreen, Josh Glickstow and Kyle Cookstow. We just, you know, make jokes most of the time. It's like, you know, it's a fun podcast. And also, I was on Giant Bomb's live at E3 day 2 thing. I'm at the 11 p.m. slot. I think they, like, have uploaded them separately, so you can just find the section that says Katie McCarthy. Yeah, and I was on that, and that was pretty fun. It was very late at night, and I had to, like, stop myself from yawning because I was very tired. But other than that, it was really fun. It was just like me, Andy from Game Informer, and then a few people from GameSpot, and Jeff Gerstmann hosting, obviously. So yeah, check that out.
Stay tuned for all of our RPG coverage and E3 coverage over on the site. You can go find it pretty easily. We got a nice big roundup for you where we interviewed the Pokemon Sword and Shield developers, we interviewed the Cyberpunk developers, we interviewed the Tales of Arise developers, and the Trials of Mana developers, so you can find all of that good stuff over there. But okay, we'll be back next week. We'll be restarting the console RPG quest, and then I think Nadia and I have some games that we want to be talking about, because we've been playing some games and some RPGs. We haven't had a chance to talk about them yet, but I think it's time for me to review Slay the Spire.
Yeah, and I should, I don't know if I'll have enough to review, but I'll definitely want to talk about it. I've been playing it too.
But for Nadia, Katie, and myself, thanks for listening, and until next time, happy adventuring.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons. Oder, Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil. Unser Bestes.